Tonight's oral submission docket, in the order of their presentation, they are as follows. Union Bankers Insurance Company versus Thomas D. and Ann Shelton from Wood County. Johnny K. Thomas versus the Honorable Elizabeth Ray, an original mandamus proceeding. And James W. and Cheryl D. Catalina doing business as Catalina Leasing versus William J. Blaisdell doing business as Casey Cars from Harris County. Court has allotted a particular amount of time for each party to present argument in these matters. You should be aware of that time. The petitioner or relator can reserve a certain portion of time for rebuttal by so advising the marshal of this court. These arguments are being recorded for the court's convenience. If you desire to listen to the arguments, you may make application with our clerk. We will take a brief recess in between the presentation of each argument and complete the arguments before lunch. The court is now ready to hear from petitioner in Union Bankers versus Shelton.
May it please the court, Mr. Bob Shannon, present argument for petitioners. Petitioners reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court. My name is Bob Shannon. I practice law here in Austin at Bacon Box. With me is Patrick Keel, and we are here representing the petitioner in Union Bankers Insurance Company. The respondent, Thomas Shelton, claims damages as a result of a cancellation of a health policy. Union Bankers canceled the health policy because Shelton has misrepresented certain physical conditions in his application for insurance. After a jury trial, the trial court rendered judgment that Shelton took nothing. The Court of Appeals reversed the judgment in part and remanded the cause for trial. In April of 1988, Shelton applied to Union Bankers for health insurance. In response to questions about his physical condition, Shelton answered that he had never had any indication of disorders of the muscular or skeletal system. And then Union Bankers issued him a policy in April of 1988. 7 months after the policy was issued, Shelton was diagnosed as having necrosis of the ball of the left hip joint. And then he underwent surgery for the total replacement of his hip. Before paying the claim, Union Bankers requested medical records from the treating physicians from the hospital. From the medical records, the company learned that Shelton had consulted two doctors 5 or 6 months after purchasing the policy, and about a pain in his left leg.
Had he consulted physicians before he bought the policy? There was no medical attention to that particular ailment before that time.
Shelton told one of the doctors that he had experienced pain in his left leg, his left hip, his left thigh, his left knee for about a year. He told the other doctor that he had experienced serious pain in his left hip for about 5 years. Union Bankers then requested him to sign a rider excluding coverage for matters arising from the hip disorder. And when he refused to sign the rider, the company canceled the policy and refunded premiums. Now, the jury found against all, in answering the question, they found all of Shelton's questions against him. They found for Union Bankers on all of its questions except one. Among other things, the jury found that Union Bankers refused to find that Union Bankers breached the contract by canceling the policy. The jury did find that Shelton made the false representation, that they were material, and the company had relied upon representations and issuing the policy. Now, however, the jury failed to find that Shelton had intentionally misrepresented his physical condition in the application that he filled out. Based upon the jury's verdict, the trial court rendered a take nothing judgment. The Court of Appeals reversed the judgment in part, and because the jury had failed to find that Shelton had intended to deceive the company by making the misrepresentations, the Court of Appeals concluded that as a matter of law, the company had breached the policy by canceling it. The court also held that under the duty of good faith and fair dealing, an insurer might breach the duty by canceling it without a reasonable basis. Then the court remanded the duty of the good faith and fair dealing claim for a new trial to the trial court. Now, Union Bankers has 2 points before this court. First point is that the Court of Appeals erred in holding that an insurer must show intent to deceive irrespective of when the policy, health policy was canceled. And the second point is that the court erred in remanding the good faith and fair dealing claim because there was no evidence that Union Banker had no reasonable basis for canceling the claim. Respecting life insurance, the cases early on held that the life insurance company had the burden to show that the insured intended to deceive when he made misrepresentation in the application for a policy. The courts applied this rule irrespective of the time that the insurer sought to set aside the policy. Respecting health insurance, however, the legislature passed in 1955 what is now Article 3.70-A32 of the Insurance Code.
Counsel, is that the same as an intent to deceive?
Pardon?
Under 3.70, are you saying that
yes.
is the same yes. as an intent to deceive?
Fraudulent representation or intent to deceive.
On the same thing.
Right. And if I may, I'll read that section. It's rather short. After 2 years from the date of the issue of this policy, no misstatements except fraudulent misstatements made by the application, the applicant in the application for such policy shall be used to void the policy or to deny a claim for loss incurred or disability as defined by the policy commencing after the expiration of the 2 year period. In other words, the statute only requires the health insurer to show fraud when the company cancels a policy more than 2 years after its issue. In the present case, however, the Court of Appeals held that Union Bankers was required to obtain a finding that fraud, even though the policy of insurance was canceled within the first two-year period. And we take the position and urge the court that the Texarkana court's holding is contrary to Article 3.70-3 of the Insurance Code. This article sets up two distinct periods of time. The first 2 years following the issuance of the policy, and then the subsequent years. The statute also sets up two classes of misstatements, those which are made fraudulently and those which do not rise to the level of fraud. After 2 years, only fraudulent misstatements will void a policy. But during the first 2 years after the policy is issued, it may be canceled based upon any mere material misstatement made in the application. Now here it's undisputed that Union Bankers canceled the policy within the first 2 years after its issuance. Because the jury found that he had made false representation and that the company had relied upon them, cancellation within the first 2 years was proper. However, the Court of Appeals required a finding of fraudulent intent, and the court relied upon, for this conclusion, upon other language in Article 3.70-3A2. This language, which was relied on by the court, provides in part as follows. The foregoing policy provision shall not be construed as to affect any legal requirement for avoidance of a policy or denial of a claim during such initial two-year period. The Court of Appeals reasoned that this language was in deference to a common law rule that fraud had to be proved to avoid a health policy. The court pointed out that the purported common law rule was established by the cases before Article 3.70-A-32 of the Code was adopted in 1955. Now, this so-called common law rule was established by the Martinez case decided by the El Paso court in 1944. Martinez involved a disability policy, and in Martinez, the court, relying on life insurance cases, life back insurance policy cases, held that a misrepresentation in an application for disability insurance does not defeat recovery unless the intent to deceive is proved. Then...
So basically, absent the statute, you agree that the common law rule would have required the proof of intent?
Judge Doggett, yes, I agree that the Martinez court held that, and the Court of Appeals was cited by this court in the Clark case. In a strange side, the Clark case again involved a life insurance policy, but the Court of Appeals used this reason to conclude that there was a common law rule.
Not much reason to discriminate between different kinds of policies in that regard, is there, in terms of the common law as distinguished from the statute?
Well, I've always felt, and I have no case authority for this, but I've always felt that in a life insurance context, for example, it's more important to place a greater burden upon an insurance company to prove, simply because the insured in a life insurance context is not going to be around when the policy is collected. Also, I think, which is an important consideration, is I understand at least in individual life insurance applications, you're usually sent to a doctor for examination, and so a life insurance company is not relying so much upon the answers to the questions in the application. The converse, I think, is true that in the ordinary health and accident policy, you're hardly ever sent to a physician for an examination. And so you do have, the company does rely more upon the answers. And so this provision, passed with the statute, of course, doesn't do away with the requirement for showing the fraud. It simply means that there's a two-year window before it comes into play. And I think probably the reason was that usually, if there has been some character misrepresentation, it's going to show up in a fairly short time. And then there the policy of repose should obtain, and then after a period, two-year period, what the company should not be able to counsel unless they're able to show fraud.
Is this basically a case of statutory construction,
yes,
as to whether the legislature, by this statute, intended to alter the common law rule?
Yes, I think so.
Mr. Shannon, you're about out of time, but I wanted to get your response to why shouldn't we hold, as the Court of Appeals did, due to good faith and fair dealing extends to any breach of contract, including cancellation?
Well, Judge Gonzalez, we did note in our brief that the Court of Appeals did expand the ruling. I couldn't find any cases that the courts had expanded it.
Why shouldn't we? What are the policy considerations? Why should we not expand?
Well, as a matter of fact, Judge, I am unable to really articulate a real reason why it shouldn't be applicable to a cancellation as well as to a denial or delay of the claim. It all stems from the policy. We take the position that we take in the second point is under the facts of this case, even though there is a duty, there was no evidence. Going back to the statutory construction problem at point one, we reply that if the Texarkana court position is correct, it simply would cause the provision, the first provision in the paragraph under consideration, simply be to be a useless act on the part of the legislature. Of course, the well-recognized rule is that we assume that the legislature doesn't do a useless act. We submit that the legislature, in passing this act, would not have distinguished between misstatements made during the first 2 years and fraudulent misstatements thereafter unless the distinction was to have some meaning. If the legislature intended by the proviso to leave health policies subject to an existing common law rule requiring intent to deceive, then the operative provisions of Article 3.70-3A would serve no purpose. The because the intent requirement was in place in the common law without the enactment of the statute, and because intent is the only distinction made in the first paragraph of the statute. The statute accomplishes nothing if the Court of Appeals' construction is correct.
What other reasons for cancellation might exist other than material misrepresentation or fraud in the application?
Well, that, of course, is the most common reason, I guess, Judge.
I understand that, but my question is, I guess, basically, did the statute address, the statute specifically says it can be canceled only for fraud after the first 2 years. Are there historically other reasons that a policy might be canceled that are eliminated by that statute?
Well, of course, the obvious reason, I guess, that not paying the premium is a basis for cancellation at any time. I think that would obtain after 2 years as well. But
I guess my point is, what was the statute trying to reach? Because one phrase or the other is fairly useless in there.
I think if
the common law, if the status of the common law at the time the statute was enacted, that you had to have material misrepresentation or fraud and I distinguish those two, in order to cancel a policy, and the legislature says after the first 2 years can only cancel it for fraud, then your argument that material representation in the first 2 years, whether by fraud or innocently, is good cause for cancellation. What is that other language about?
I would suggest, Judge, that the other language in the proviso language means that you've still got the burden to show a misrepresentation, that it was material. You've still got the burden to show that you gave notice to the company or to the individual that you were going to cancel it in a reasonable time, and then you still have to return the premiums. I think that's what the other language means. You took care of fraud and misrepresentation in the first paragraph, but you've got all the burden, as you had it in common law, and that's spelled out in the other provision.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
The court is ready to hear argument from respondents.
May it please the court, Mr. Edward Merritt and Mr. Gregory Graychak present argument for respondents. Mr. Graychak will present the first 10 minutes.
May it please the court, my name is Greg Graychak, and together with Ed Merritt, we represent Tommy and Ann Shelton. I will address first the issue of intent to deceive. Mr. Merritt will then subsequently address the bad faith issue, the second point raised by Union Bankers. Because it highlights the issue before this honorable court, it bears pointing out exactly who Tommy and Ann Shelton are. Tommy Shelton is a high school graduate, fast approaching 40, who has had to toil at jobs requiring manual labor all his life to feed and clothe his family. Tommy does not complain about working hard, and in fact, Tommy doesn't complain much about himself at all. Like most men, especially those who perform manual labor, Tommy does not go to a doctor for every ache and pain that he experiences. To the contrary, men like Tommy ignore these aches and pains unless and until they become sufficiently significant to affect their ability to perform their daily functions. Anything less is not a problem, and to these types of men is not worthy of their notice. This is not a case where a man who has cancer goes out and gets an insurance policy by lying to the insurance company about his condition. This is not a case of an individual who has some life-altering illness, such as a heart attack or open-heart surgery, and then fails to disclose that life-altering, significant situation in his life on a policy of insurance. This is not even a case where a man had a condition significant enough to him to seek medical care and then neglected to place that on an application for insurance unintentionally or otherwise. This is a case where a man who performs hard manual labor for a living experienced aches and pains in his legs and back on occasion. And these aches and pains were clearly never significant enough to Tommy Shelton to require medical attention or to inhibit his daily, significantly difficult tasks. Even Union Bankers' own vice president, speaking for the company at trial, admitted that virtually every adult in this country experiences at one time or another aches and pains in the joints or musculoskeletal system. Yet this insurance company now wants to void this policy after it's been in effect for almost a year for one of these aches or pains. It is also important to keep at the forefront of this discussion the fact that Union Bankers never, until the time of trial, denied that this claim was a pre-existing condition. In essence, Union Bankers never denied this claim. They didn't go that far. They didn't even bother to address the claim. What Union Bankers did do, when faced with a $20,000 medical claim and a possibility that this condition predated the application, they decided to rewrite the policy to suit their purposes. That is, to allow them to keep the premiums and yet exclude the coverage. When the insured refused to acquiesce in this rewriting of the policy, Union Bankers just canceled.
I don't understand, counsel. You say they didn't question the claim?
I'm not saying that they didn't question the claim. They, in fact, started a review internally for pre-existing. They simply never addressed to Tommy Shelton that that was a basis of their denial of the claim.
But they didn't make payments.
No, the claim was never paid. Rather than address the claim, they denied the policy based on what they say was a pre-existing condition not disclosed in the health application. In fact, the record discloses that Union Bankers didn't even bother to address its burden under material misrepresentation, the requirement to prove intent to deceive or whatever else, until the eve of the trial, when at that point the plaintiffs asked for judgment, at least on the contract claim, because it wasn't pled, and Union Bankers asked for a trial amendment to allow it to assert the affirmative defense of material misrepresentation. It is this very type of action that the court condemned in Republic Insurance Company versus Stoker, a decision of the El Paso Court of Appeals rendered November 17th of this year. There, that court held that the insurers are entitled to rely upon the insurer's stated grounds for denying a claim, citing this court's opinion in Viles versus Security National Insurance Company, that to hold otherwise vitiates the cause of action by allowing the insurer to escape liability under any theory that allows it to avoid payment, no matter how late in the day that theory is discovered.
Counsel, do you agree that Union Bankers would have been within its rights to deny issuing the policy in the first instance if Mr. Shelton had disclosed his hip necrosis in his application?
That is a question that I don't want to concede to. We addressed that in the Court of Appeals, we argued about it at trial, and we didn't bring that issue before the court. But it's our contention that the pre-existing condition language in the policy that allows the insurance company to claim pre-existing condition based on an ordinarily prudent person standard is contrary to the public policy this state has expressed in the statute, requiring materiality, requiring those, requiring intent to deceive. And since those issues are washed away by Union Bankers' ordinarily prudent person standard in their pre-existing clause, we contend that clause is invalid as written. But as written, it would allow Union Bankers to deny, under the policy terms, a claim as pre-existing condition. Something I would point out again that they never did do in this case.
My question related more to issuance of the policy in the first instance. If Mr. Shelton had said, I've got hip problems, had disclosed that, would they have been within their rights to deny issuance of the policy in the first instance?
Certainly, as with any contract, if the insurance company chooses not to enter into a contract with an individual, that's their right, whatever the basis of that is. And clearly there is a mechanism in Texas jurisprudence to deal with those situations where the insurance company wasn't given a fair right to address the situation up front.
And your contention is that that is limited to proof of intent to defraud the insurance company.
There are two mechanisms in the scheme in Texas insurance law to address that particular problem. The first is material misrepresentation. where if they can prove all the elements required by material misrepresentation, they can void the coverage at an issue up front. If they cannot prove all of those elements, but they can prove that this was a condition that pre-existed and that the insurer knew about it and didn't disclose it, at that point, pre-existing kicks in, and they can deny the claim, although they cannot deny the cover, the policy.
Counsel, if you're writing a health insurance policy, isn't it material for the company to know about aches and pains?
If it's material for the company to know about aches and pains that are insignificant to the insured, their question should ask, have you ever experienced any ache or pain in any joint? Not, have you ever experienced any disorders, or have you ever had any indications or treatment for any disorders in the musculoskeletal system? When you're dealing with high school graduates that work for a living at pounding nails, they don't really understand what a disorder of the musculoskeletal system is. If you ask them, have you ever had an ache in your back, they'll know what that means. The insurance company drafted their application questions. They asked this insured what they felt they had to know. And if they didn't get all the information they wanted, that should be their burden. Likewise, I believe Texas jurisprudence requires that if there are unintentional omissions, if the insured simply forgot about it. You know, 3 years back, I went to the doctor because I had a sore back, and he said, here, take these pills and go away. You know, 3 years later, he forgot about it. An unintentional misrepresentation should not
void. Was that an issue in this case? That it was an unintentional misrepresentation?
Clearly it was, and that's what the jury, in fact, found. In the jury's charge, that this man did not intend to lie to these people about his aches or pains, that he simply did unintentionally disclose or did not disclose is what the jury apparently believed in this case.
Counsel, the amici argue that every other state in the union treats health claims different than life and allows a 2-year or a window statute. When there's a statute like this, when there is a window of contestability for an insurance company in health claims, have you examined those cases, and is that true? In other words, is the Martinez rule that Texas had in 1944 an aberration nationally?
I don't believe it's an aberration. Some of the commentary that I've seen call it the modern view, that the burden should be placed on the insurance company.
Your brief is exclusively confined to Texas cases.
Yes, Your Honor, it is. I have
Could
not.
Can you give us some indication of what the national trend is in this area?
I would be happy to do that for the court if the court so desires. Addressing the statute briefly, I would point out that this particular statute is relatively clear that it deals with misrepresentations or misstatements after 2 years from the policy issue date. It does not deal with, it specifically adds a precautionary parenthetical to exclude the first 2 years of the policy. The legislature said this statute doesn't apply to the first 2 years. We're saying after 2 years, you can only cancel the policy for fraudulent misrepresentation. One commentator that I've read...
What can they cancel the policy for in the first 2 years?
One commentator, That is a good question. There are other things that the policy could be canceled for. Warranties, express warranties that were breached, conditions preceding that were not met. Any type of defense to a contract would, of course, apply during the first 2 years. But the misrepresentation requirement still requires the intent element within the first 2 years under the common law. As a matter of fact, in every type of insurance policy in the state, it requires there's an intent to deceive before you can cancel an existing policy. And I would point out that they're trying to cancel this policy after a claim is made, not before. So at that time, the insured is at their mercy. Either they get what they pay for, or they get sent off to the creditors to try to deal with these people in paying these bills that they incurred with the thought that they had coverage to take care of this problem.
Was Ann Shelton insured under this?
Ann Shelton wasn't insured by Union Bankers. I don't recall at this point if she was insured under this policy or if she had a separate policy issued at the same time.
What is the purpose of the statute if fraudulent misstatements are necessary both before and after the 2-year period?
One commentator that I read opined that the purpose of this particular statute was to distinguish post-2-year health insurance from post-2-year life insurance. whereas post-2-year life insurance has an incontestability provision. After 2 years, you're stuck. You can't deny it for any reason, material misrepresentation or otherwise, supposedly. In health insurance, because the insured is still there, still able to provide testimony if necessary as to the unintentional nature of the representation, the legislature said, insurance company, you may deny or cancel the policy for material misrepresentations that include the element of intent. That we believe, is the purpose of this particular statutory provision.
It's an odd element of intent is not involved in the first 2 years.
No, the element of intent would be involved in the first 2 years. What we're saying is that after 2 years, to distinguish it from a life insurance policy that is completely incontestable, you can still deny a health insurance policy if you prove the material misrepresentation of it.
Life insurance can't be canceled for fraud after
under the incontestability provision, that's correct.
But health insurance can.
Yes.
Other than that, the same policies or the same rules of law apply to both. That's
yes.
What you're saying. And that includes that the misrepresentation must be material.
Yes.
In the first 2 years.
It's phrased in an odd way, if that's the purpose.
It is phrased in an odd way.
It looks like the legislature would have said, misstatements, but only fraudulent, may be made the basis for cancellation instead of saying no misstatements except fraudulent may be made.
Right, but I would contend that if the legislature had wanted to vitiate the protection of material misrepresentation within the first 2 years, they could have easily said so. They could have said no intent is required within 2 years, especially in light of the common law rules that existed at the time the statute was drafted. And that language appears nowhere. As a matter of fact, if you look at the purpose set out by the legislature when they enacted this provision, they said that the whole 3.70 was adopted to facilitate public understanding of coverage and to eliminate provisions contained in individual accident and sickness insurance policies which may be unjust, unfair, or misleading. I would contend that putting the burden on the insurer to wait until they have a catastrophic loss and then coming in and investigating whether to deny a claim is unjust and unfair to the insurer. If that is something the insurance company doesn't want to take the burden on, they can protect themselves by requiring physical examinations of the insurer prior to.
As far as say, maybe you're getting to that, but how is the company to know there may be conditions that don't show up in a routine physical examination? This one might not show up.
They can require a physical examination. They could not go to that expense, but simply require that you give them the name of your doctor and they review your medical records before they issue the policy. There are several avenues they could take in various degrees of expense that, of course, would be passed on to the consumer, but at least the burden would not be placed on the consumer to wait until he suffered a loss that he can't bear and then have to come back and try to argue with an insurance company about his coverage. I will now turn the podium over to Mr. Merritt, who will address the bad faith issue. Thank you.
The cause of action so plainly enunciated by this court in Arnold arises only in the context of an insurer's denial of a claim or delay in payment of a claim, not its decision to cancel a policy altogether. I quote from the application for writ of error as proposed by Union Bank of Insurance to show you exactly what the position is, which is, hey, Arnold only says claim, so therefore we can cancel the policy with impunity and not worry about it. We don't have to answer to anybody when it comes to cancellation. There is no conduct of Union Bankers that can form the basis for a breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing, period. That's another quote from the brief. Now, again, I believe Judge Shannon has already told you that their position is really not that, but that it's really, hey, we had a bona fide reason for canceling this, and even though we're wrong, we're sorry. All I want to point out to the court is that in their brief they said, hey, Arnold should be restricted. This court should restrict it to claims only, period. And I think if you read the Arnold opinion, where it says Arnold raises the issue of whether there is a duty on the part of insurers to deal fairly and in good faith with their insurers. We hold that such a duty of good faith and fair dealing exists, period. There is a duty. That duty arises from the special relationship. It does not arise strictly because of a contract and or a claim made under that contract of insurance. It is the special relationship.
Is it your contention that if you lose on the first issue, that we should still remand the case for a trial on the bad faith issue?
Yes, Your Honor.
Could you expand on your answer, please?
Yes, Your Honor. I would cite the court specifically to its opinion in the Viles case, which stands for the proposition that a breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing stands of itself and stands of its own two legs. Specifically in this case,
what would that duty consist of if, here again, hypothetically, I'm just asking you, if you lose on the first issue and essentially the judgment's rendered on the contract that says union bankers act within their contractual rights, what would the duty of good faith and fair dealing, the tort duty, consist of under those circumstances?
In this particular case, it would have to do with the conduct of the company dating back specifically to their first letter to Tommy, where he informed them of their desire, which was, while servicing your claim, we learned that the medical facts shown on the application for this policy were not complete. This was probably an oversight, but it does affect the insurance. They specifically told Tommy Shelton in their very first correspondence to him raising this point, we think you probably just overlooked this, but hey, there might be a problem here. What we want to do is rider that condition completely out. You also look at the policy itself. It has built in a pre-existing provision. Union Bankers was fully capable of denying this claim based on pre-existing and saying, pre-existing, we have a policy that provides for that. If you read the policy, it says, for undisclosed conditions. Union Bankers knew going in that people sometimes failed to disclose stuff. Did they say they would cancel the coverage? No. They said that particular claim would not be paid. Instead, in this case, what they came back and did, they said, we want to reform it completely. We want to take it completely out so that we're not ever liable for this condition 2 years down the road when the termination of potential defenses arises. We want to do something different. We want to do something that our contract doesn't allow for. We want to do something that the law does not allow for. We want to reform the contract and rider out this condition. Tommy Shelton said, no, I don't want to do that. You want to deny my claim? Fine, deny my claim. When he refused to sign the rider, they didn't just deny the claim. They canceled his entire coverage. And that's the grievous error that they made because they have no right. And again, straying from your question just a bit, we don't concede they had any right to cancel because the only condition for cancellation in this state for misrepresentation includes in it the element of intent. Every single case you study or read on that point, health or life, says you've got to find intent to cancel a contract based upon a material misrepresentation.
This statute, your contention is this statute does not change the common law rule?
Correct, it does not.
What is the purpose of the statute?
The purpose
doesn't change the common law.
The purpose is to draw to the practitioners of health insurance companies and life insurance the distinction between limitation or a time limit on defenses under a life case, wherein it's completely barred after 2 years, and the fact that in a health insurance company case, for the very policy reasons we've already talked about, which are the health insured is usually still alive, therefore can be questioned, an insurance company, after 2 years, can continue to question if they can prove material misrepresentation, just like they could in the first 2 years. But it's different from a life insurance company case. In life insurance, within the 2 years, you prove intent. Health insurance, you prove intent. After 2 years, you can't prove anything in a life insurance company case. It's over with. You don't have a right insurance company to show anything. However, health insurance company, you can go ahead. After 2 years, you can still, if it's fraudulent, you can attempt to rescind the policy. But in this case, it was a rescission that we're complaining was incorrect, not the denial of the claim per se.
And if your time is up, one more question. I want to try to understand in the simplest possible terms what you're arguing, and correct me if I'm wrong at any point, but what I hear is that it was the act of cancellation that was itself the act of bad faith, that it was their prerogative if they felt a misrepresentation, material misrepresentation had been made, to deny the claim and then undertake whatever contest derived from that or arose out of that. But they went a step further when he wouldn't agree to writing this condition out of the policy, and simply canceled the whole policy, all its coverage, to avoid any future exposure. This is when that was an act of bad faith, you're saying, because they didn't litigate the claim that was made. They canceled all of its coverage.
Correct. Correct. And
while he was in a precarious medical condition.
Exactly right. And you stated exactly right. The only thing, and the last point I would make is that pre-existing condition does not have the element of intent. If you fail to disclose pre-existing condition allows this company to deny that specific claim. It does not allow them to rescind coverage. Only misrepresentation defense allows rescission of coverage.
I understood your co-counsel to argue that to deny the claim under that provision in these circumstances would be contrary to public policy.
Again, Your Honor, whether or not under these specific facts we agree with the result, clearly Union Bankers has available to them per the policy a pre-existing condition defense that they had a right to raise.
I thought your counsel argued that that defense, which was addressed in the trial court and the court of appeals, was illegal, contrary to public policy.
Your Honor, it is our position, and we hope that the court would take that position, but as the law exists today, that has not been done. There is available to Union Bankers a pre-existing defense. It was available to them.
Which your
to deny the claim.
Which your position in the litigation
they
is,
should,
does
they
not exist.
Shouldn't, but it does. Per the policy. It is set out in the policy. And so what you've got is you've got a right, they've got a right to deny the claim per se, assuming that it's a valid public policy, but they don't have a right to cancel the contract.
How has your client been harmed?
Well, Your Honor, you've got a $250,000 a major medical policy, which is suddenly canceled. There's a chance that he will have difficulty getting that coverage. You know, you got to understand, in April, when he applied for coverage, he had had no medical treatment for any conditions, period.
But if they have a right to deny
now he's got a bad hip.
If they have the right to deny the hip claim under the pre-existing condition provision, which you say they would, you disagree that they have that right, then how is he harmed if they rescind the policy?
Well, then you've got a man who's uncovered. You know, we get health insurance coverage to buy peace of mind. Suddenly, he's without coverage, period. He and his wife are both without coverage as a result of their actions.
They were on the same policy?
Yes, they were. And they canceled both of them.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the first call in the court. Oh, yes. It does not conclude the argument. Sorry.
Just a few comments.
What reason would there be for canceling Ann Shelton's pension?
Judge Becker, I don't know. I wasn't aware that Ann was covered under this particular policy. And she was a party to the lawsuit, but Mr. Merritt has represented that she was.
Would there be any reason?
Not for her coverage, but that she wasn't suing for any, as I understand, for any damages for the denial of her coverage.
She's suing, apparently, that on the idea of the cancellation
of the policy and then refusal to pay the benefits of the
Do you take the position that a insurance company can cancel a policy for any reason?
No, it has to have a reasonable basis to cancel the policy.
And the reasonable basis here was that he refused to exclude the
surgery from his policy?
No, the reasonable basis for canceling the policy here was that he misrepresented his physical condition in his application for the insurance.
But it was not canceled until he refused to. In other words, he disagreed with the insurance company about coverage. And now this is before we've had a jury trial. He disagreed. He thought his surgery was covered. Refused to exclude it from coverage. Perhaps wanted to litigate it. And as a result, the whole policy.
Well, I hold the position that he did, the company did have a reasonable basis simply because of a material and false misrepresentations in the policy. And
their belief that it was material.
Yes.
His belief that it was not.
Right. I mean, they received the records of the doctors. They saw that he told one doctor he'd been having serious hip pain for 5 years, told another doctor he had a series of pain in his left limb for at least 1 year. And this certainly is some evidence to form a reasonable basis for denial.
If your view of the law is, if the law is as you view it, under the example that the opposing counsel used earlier, the failure of somebody to recall that they've been to see the doctor 3 years before on one occasion for back pain, failing to answer correctly a question in an application that related to that incident, would that allow cancellation of all coverage?
It'd have to be a material misrepresentation, and the jury here found that it was a material misrepresentation. Let me say that a lot of the arguments being made by counsel here were resolved against them by the jury. For example, in the first issue submitted to the court, had to do with whether or not the insurance company breached the contract by failing to pay the medical benefits. It was submitted in the definition of the failure to pay. The jury refused to find the breach. The jury refused to find a breach for cancellation. The jury refused to find that there was a violation of deceptive trade practice. They have, in their brief, for example, they've argued that there was some kind of an estoppel by the reason they claim that we assured that there was coverage. That particular question was submitted to the jury. The jury refused to find that there was So I would urge the court to take a look at the submission, and you'll find a clean line of answers on the part of the jury, which takes care of most of the argument, most of the position that they're taking here. Now, one thing in conclusion, they fault us for pointing out in our application for writ of error that Arnold does not cover cancellation. We simply wanted to point out that the Court of Appeals in this case had expanded the doctrine of good faith and fair dealing to cover cancellation. Obviously, it did. We pointed it out. We say that we're basically relying on here, in response to Judge Gonzalez's question, that we did have a reasonable basis for cancellation based upon the answers that he made in his application.
I'm real confused about this. The other side's arguing that the insurance company could have denied the claim for a pre-existing condition. The jury found Shelton did not intentionally misrepresent that condition. That's grounds for denial of the claim, but they're arguing that's not ground for cancellation of the policy, and that is the bad faith act. Can you put that in some kind of context for me, Judge? I'm wrestling with it.
Well, personally, say they failed to find there was an intent to deceive. That was our issue. They failed to find for us. We take the position that if, in either way, cancellation or denial, that the representations that they made, it would have been sufficient to deny it or to cancel it.
The impact is significantly different on the insured. The cancellation of policy for all coverage and denial of a claim, a particular claim under the policy.
Yes, it is a greater impact. We'll agree with that.
And certainly affects the individual's insurability for all purposes.
Well, let me suggest to the court, and I think counsel was mistaken with respect to present coverage, as I read the statement of facts in the case, he has coverage. He's working now for some company, and as I understand, he has health coverage.
And this was just a major medical policy?
This was a group policy, I think, that was supplied by the employer, as I recall.
Any other questions?
Mr. Shannon, under the jury answers in this case, then if we were to get the good faith issue, we would have to decide whether in the absence of a breach of contract, there could be a breach of the duty of good faith and fair dealing.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel.
Now that concludes the argument of first call. We'll take a brief recess.